National and Labor temporarily put aside their political differences to front the media together today to announce an initiative to strip back the consenting process and free up zoning for housing to allow more density in urban parts of the country. This coming together, these changes, however, will they actually lead to more houses? It seems that it's about allowing for greater density, but the detail, well, the devil's often in that, and the detail is still to come. Joining me now is Building Industry Federation Chief Executive Julian Lays. Kia ora, Julian.
Kia ora, Brian. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you know about what the government actually announced today?
Oh, look, I think despite the swagger and the backslapping that Labor and National both gave each other today, it's actually quite disappointing because both parties between them have not actually addressed the fundamental issues. And, you know, if you even take time to look at that PwC and Sense Partners report in which the announcement was based, even it acknowledges that this new policy of three-story homes will not actually dramatically drop prices. So housing affordability is still an issue, and this announcement today is certainly no silver bullet.
What they've said is that you'll be able to build up to three stories on your property, what, without getting a consent from your local council?
Correct. So it's basically, you know, giving anybody the right to do that on their property, and you know, that's, I don't think, you know, look, anyone's disputing that, and that's, you know, it's an inherent National Party policy. But I think, you know, wahoo, it's great that anyone can do that in their backyard, but New Zealand's never been able to build more than 40,000 homes, let alone an additional 100,000 more homes that this is talking about. And we already have a record number of new building consents in September, 46,000. Many of those won't get built because we have critical infrastructure and supply chain issues that haven't been addressed. And this is what this policy hasn't even come close to talking about.
So what are those supply chain issues or supply chain issues which need change?
Yeah. Oh, indeed. Well, look, one of them is, and we're seeing this because COVID has certainly enhanced it, but it was there before COVID too. It's essentially the lack of capacity in some cases to produce building products such as structural timber. You know, are we going to provide the investment for another sawmill costing hundreds of millions of dollars and taking years to build because we do need more competition and supply to the market, which is currently dominated by two major players? There are things like that through to councils who will need, to address critical infrastructure issues around improved roading and public transport, because all of this also is going to clearly mean a big increase in congestion. So, you know, I think we need to go back to the basics. And as you said, Brian, in your intro, the devil is in the detail.
Given that, as you pointed out there, Julian, we've had a record number of building consents. What, in the last quarter or the last month?
This is just in the last quarter.
Okay, yeah. The last quarter. Is it actually the fault of the regulators, i.e. the councils and the planning consent process, that gets the blame, but is it really the issue at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's not the only issue. It's one part of the issue. And the other thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is houses, any structures, get built by people. And at the moment, you know, there's a huge lack of skilled construction workers. Again, this was the case before COVID. COVID's just exacerbated that. You know, we're now looking at 50,000 skilled workers that are needed over the next couple of years. And things already are not getting built because there simply isn't the capacity to do so. So, you know, I think it's all very fine and well to talk about 100,000 new homes, but if you're not truly addressing the root causes of affordability and making those homes possible, then it tends to be pie in the sky.
However, Julian, if they're not having to go to the council in the first place to make the changes, they can just start building. I mean, is it as simple as that? That seems a little bit too simple, given all the other things you need council consent for. I mean, we just had the council coming around, or an officer of the council coming around to check our new fireplace. I'm guessing, yep. Surely you're still going to need some kind of consent process going on.
Yes. Look. You'll certainly need consenting, and you'll need building inspectors, and you'll need your code of compliance. So there's still going to be that oversight. I think what this is saying is that from a policy point of view, you will now have a right to be able to build, as opposed to having to seek or put an application and potentially go through a hearing process with neighbours that argue that you can't build, or all the other hurdles that there currently are for that process. So it will cut through some of that, but it will potentially reduce some of the cost of consenting, but it's not addressing all those other issues which simply won't actually even allow building to take place in the first place.
Julian, I know this isn't really your problem, but I can imagine, and we're going to be talking about a couple of neighbours who've got a disagreement later on in the program, can imagine a lot of neighbours getting rather upset when their neighbour goes from one stories to three stories and there's nothing they can do about it.
No, as long as the structure is 1.5 metres from the boundary and 2.5 metres, I think, from the front of the property, they can do that. So all of those issues around, right to light and, I guess, enjoyment of views, they are very much out the window, so to speak. This is about trying to get as many people into as small a space as possible. But as I said at the beginning, I don't think that's the only thing that's going to address housing affordability. And the reports on which this is based actually acknowledge that, because things like building materials are still going to be expensive. Labour, when you can get it, would be expensive. Those are the things that we need to be looking at, including also, bringing in I think things like technology and greater efficiency into how we build homes, not necessarily just building, trying to say that we'll build more of them.
Dumb question, Julian, but do we grow the right trees for the timber we need for our houses?
We do, although when you look at Northland, for example, the reason that sawmill up in Whangarei closed was because the pine timber there, they cut all of the older timber, which is the harder wood, which goes into structural framing. You can't build houses with soft pine, and it takes time to grow. So look, we certainly have the timber. We probably just need to introduce more competition and even more capacity so it becomes more affordable and there's more of it.
There are plenty of logs heading off to the ports, aren't there, Julian?
Absolutely, and it's a record time for the export of timber overseas. So we are actually shipping timber offshore that ordinarily would be used in local building.
Okay, so actually there's houses getting built, but not in New Zealand.
Correct, or timber being used that could be for housing, but it's used for other purposes overseas, such as scaffolding and other things like that. So yeah, look, those are things too that all go into this equation. But the current approach is is it the market rules?
Okay, well, what can if the government isn't going to build it or set up a timber company, right? So what's the medium term, let alone short term solution to the lack of building materials in this country?
Well, look, it's two things. I think in terms of the investment in critical infrastructure, including sawmills, people need the certainty to be able to invest $300 to $400 million. And if we think back to Fletcher Building, when they first got underway building state homes across New Zealand, it was because the MJ Savage government gave them the certainty of saying, you build us all of these state homes and we'll give you a contract for 10 years. That kind of certainty, it just doesn't exist anymore. So the chances of someone taking a punt on that sort of money for a five-year project is not certain. But also, look, I think we do need, given the current issues that we're facing with how difficult it is to import building materials from overseas, and we do import a lot of those finished products and components, and that's not going to go away for another few years yet. Do we need to rethink how much local manufacturing we actually do in this country as well?
You mentioned state houses and Fletcher Building. Now, the government hasn't really been building a lot of state houses for the last 30 years. I mean, how much is that part of the problem?
Oh, look, it's you know, the yeah, we're definitely in catch up, and Kiangi Ora is doing a very good job, and is essentially the biggest resident builder in the country, and that's, you know, from the latest budget, the last budget we had, has had a huge injection of cash to buy land and build more homes. So we are making progress, but, you know, probably not quite enough. Yeah, but, you know, again, look, I think allowing each individual to say that they can build a three-storey home isn't the answer either.
Well, I can't imagine. If we look at the social, real social housing issue, as opposed to those, look, it's not nice to be in a job and thinking, I'm never going to be able to own my own home. But maybe you're still in a reasonable rental place. I mean, the real crisis is for people who can't find a decent place at all, or are crammed half a dozen into a room so they can afford a decent place.
Yes, indeed. And you know, look, you know, this is where I think Kiangora is making progress in that regard, and you know, more is going to be done around social housing. I think but I think it's more about actually, for example, getting more people employed in building and construction, so we've got the people who can actually build more, and then also doing more to address some of those infrastructure and supply chain issues. I think if we did all of that plus freed up the consenting issue, then I think, you know, that's a more holistic approach to making this possible. So it's about thinking about the bigger picture and the detail, Brian, not just the policy, which is what we've been, which is what was announced today.
Julian, would it be fair to say that it's taken us two or three decades to get to the situation?
Yeah, it's certainly been an issue that's been, a long time in the making. So look, to give it its due, it's great that we've actually got people that are, you know, across parties starting to talk to each other. I just hope, though, that in terms of the next steps, that we do see, much greater thinking going into addressing those other fundamental issues around infrastructure and improving the supply chain. Because if we get that right, then you know, the outcome might be quite good after all.
Okay, so what are those next steps for you?
I would want to see in terms of this bill and the detail that's going into it, because it all sounds quite rushed in terms of the time frame and even the way it was announced. I think there was little consultation with the wider industry. I would like to see some form of consultation between government and industry, where they do take and seek some expert thinking around how we can address the infrastructure side with councils, and what councils are going to be able to, what sort of funding they will get to, improve some of those things I've been screaming out for in terms of roading and public transport.
Mm. Well, I'm thinking at the moment it could be easier for a lot of councils just to designate more land and build more roads. But then you run up against the problem which we've been discussing tonight about the fact that kind of urban development needs a lot of fossil fuels, because you need to get around in a car.
Yeah, exactly, Brian. And, you know, I think the other thing too is, look, you know, Auckland, for example, has got this the Central Interceptor that Watercare is building, which will address part of the city's problems when it comes to wastewater and water. But actually there is something like, I don't know, it's 900 kilometres of piping, of old pipes that still need to be replaced or improved, so all of this stuff is still sitting there from an infrastructure point of view, that when you start adding more people and more density into the mix is going to cause problems, let alone the congestion issue that you've just outlined.
Julian, do we actually have to spend a bit more on taxation to fund some of this stuff? Are we actually trying to get what we need in this country on the cheap?
It's a very good point, Brian, because I think one of the fundamental issues that we've got in New Zealand is scale. And so, you know, as a population of 5 million, we still want and expect first world services, but we're not investing in critical infrastructure. We have underinvested in so many things over the last, 20 years, and all of that's coming home to roost. And, you know, with the current COVID crisis, where, again, we're spending a lot of money in a very needy way, but, you know, that's not necessarily addressing those other issues. And so, yeah, how are we going to get that extra funding, which is going to be needed to do all of these things? And taxation is one of them. And I'm sure that's coming, or more of it's coming.
Julian, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Brian.
That's Julian Lays. He's the Chief Executive of the Building Industry Federation.